strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, appreciate you spending some time with me on a Thursday. Don't forget, next hour, bottom of the next hour, 10:35, we are going to speak with Tom Horn, the superintendent of public schools. We're going to talk about the ESA program, the immense growth, and the expense. $900 million, the prediction for this. Over about 100,000 students they're expecting for the 2024 school year. We're going to talk to him about the good, the bad, and the ugly in this, in his mind, but we'll get to that in the next hour. We talked earlier, public safety, because of the budget in Phoenix, dramatic increases in budgets for public safety. Phoenix PD is working on recruiting 560 recruits. That is a big number. That's a huge number. But we have to talk about the need for this first. We're going to talk about crime in a moment. I've got some headlines, like I always do, about crime around the country and how we can avoid some of these things. And we've actually seen a little bit of it. The way, not everybody in the zone is a criminal. Hear me out before you get angry about me just throwing shade at homeless people. My point is, there was a lack of policing in the zone, and it was an oversight, in my opinion, by the city of Phoenix, believing that they were obeying a federal ruling from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. But when you don't have law enforcement happening, and I don't care if it's a homeless community or which community it is, if you don't have any kind of rule of law, you're going to have the opposite, which is lawlessness. Human nature dictates that. Even yesterday, the vast majority of people, when they tore down that block and got rid of that block of the zone, the vast majority of the people that were living there took the offer of help from the city. But there was at least one person that had to be arrested and was acting in a threatening way toward people. You have to have the police to intervene to make that happen. But it's bigger than that. I want you to think about the enormity of policing. What happened in recent years because of staffing issues is this. The previous police chief, Jerry Williams, had to make decisions based on staffing issues. And part of those, the first responsibility of a police department is patrol. Meaning when you dial 911, when you're having the worst day of your life, there is going to be a police officer that shows up in a timely manner, at least one, to address your situation. That's the number one primary job of a police agency. But here's how things work. So you call the police, something happens, your car is broken into, whatever. The police officer comes out, an officer takes a report, does the basic investigation, that they don't make an arrest because there's nobody there to arrest. That case is then handed off to detectives. And then the detectives do the work behind the scenes. Maybe they've had a rash of these car burglaries. Maybe it meets, you know, some kind of profile that they've been seeing. So they further their investigation and they put cases together to find culprits and then build a case, and then they go out and make arrests. They build the case, they hand it to prosecutors. Prosecutors prosecute those cases. Well, when you have not enough officers for patrol and you're pulling detectives out of detective squads and you're putting them back in uniform and putting them out on patrol, you have less people to investigate those crimes. I mean, I'm not reinventing the wheel here, am I? I'm not curing cancer. This is all obvious to so many people. If we don't have enough police officers, we don't have enough detectives, we don't have enough people that can find the criminals, we're already at a disadvantage. And that's the direction that Phoenix has been going for a long time. Listen to some of these headlines. Now, here's this headline. Phoenix police working to fill vacancies, looking to hire more than 560 recruits. 564, actually. California crime surge is happening after some reforms in enforcement and prosecution reforms, but few supporters are ready to defend the changes. Senior citizen arrested after fatally shooting suspected armed robber in New York City. 7 days and 1,000 shootings in America. This is what is odd to me. When you see a headline that, and you know where the direction of the story is going, 7 days, we've had 1,000 shootings, we have to get rid of guns. And I laugh at that and I think, so you're going to tell me, an honest citizen or a single mom that's got kids in her apartment or anybody else that has to drive at night or be out, you know, in public, that's an honest, hardworking person with a statistic that shows you that criminals out there are shooting people like this. And so you want my gun. It is absolutely ludicrous. And more people are catching on to that. But the Phoenix Police Department is looking for 564 recruits. It's going to take a while to get them through the process of getting them hired because it is an extended process. There is an extensive background check. They do a credit check. They do a mental health evaluation. They do a physical fitness evaluation. There's written tests. There's all of these other requirements you have to pass in order to become hireable in a police agency. Then after you're hired, you got to go through the academy and get post-certified. Once you're post-certified, you do post-academy training with the agency, in this case would be Phoenix FTO, which is field training officer training, before you're ever in a patrol car by yourself. And even then, they will tell you that it takes you a while. It takes usually from the hiring process about 2 years total to get an officer standing alone where he or she feels comfortable in the job as a standalone officer. So we are a long way from solving the problem, but working in the direction when we see what's happening in other places, this is the right thing to do. The right thing to do is make sure that the criminal element in our society understands that the citizens are going to take public safety seriously. We talked earlier about Phoenix Fire. Now, I say Phoenix because I live in Phoenix. It's the biggest city in the valley. But I should just say the valley because the agencies around the valley that all work together, and then the sheriff's department that helps in all those unincorporated areas and helps in the areas where it needs help, DPS troopers. But public safety in Arizona has to be a priority. A message always has to be sent that the law-abiding citizens are not going to tolerate criminals. Judges have to understand, if you are not going to throw the book at people, especially violent criminals, you'll be replaced. We want a fully funded, fully staffed county attorney's office and the prosecutor's office in individual cities for city, you know, when they prosecute. We want criminals to understand we are not going to spare any expense to make sure you pay a price when you commit crimes. On the other side of that, one of the things that Phoenix is doing is upgrading its homelessness services. So we're going to try to do our best to help the people that want help. But if you are going to prey upon society, I don't care if you live in Paradise Valley or you live in the zone, if you are committing crimes against people, we're going to find you, we're going to catch you, we're going to prosecute you, and we're going to lock you up. And that lesson has to be told because there is a rash of crime in this country and people feel as if they are emboldened because there aren't enough cops. There aren't enough prosecutors out there. You look at other cities, man, we have got to keep our lesson learned in that regard. We look at other places, L.A. County for one, George Gascon, I talk about him all the time, man, bless his heart. That guy was a police chief here in Arizona, ran him out of town, didn't like his policies as a chief, went to Northern California. Same thing happened there with the crime rates because of his abysmal policies on no punishment and no bail. And he's doing the same thing in LA County. It's not a political response. You've got cops are saying, you know, the leadership and police department saying, my officers, my deputies, our people on the streets with the badges are going out and doing the dangerous and hard work of making arrests and building cases. And that office isn't prosecuting anybody, or at least not prosecuting enough people. And I just think continuing to talk about this to make sure it doesn't happen here is necessary. People like you and I, not just complaining about it, not just sitting across the lunch table or sitting at work and talking about it. We have to vote. We have to vote that way. Not necessarily political parties. I don't care what political party you're in. Nothing I'm saying should be a political party issue. It should be public safety first. Boom. That's it. And we'll see. We'll see how things go. Coming up in a moment, did Amazon invade the privacy by using Ring and Alexa? If you haven't heard the story, you may change your mind a little bit when it comes to technology. It's coming up here in just a moment.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for spending some time with us on this Thursday. If you'd like to enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card, spoil your pets with the KTAR Paw Picks contest that's going on. Send a photo of your pet. You could win the KTAR Paw Pick contest. Submit your photo at KTAR.com/contests. A different pet photo be randomly drawn at the end of each month, and someone gets that $100 gift card. So send in those picks. I like technology. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. It is interesting to see the people that were born with it, because my grandkids used to blow me away when my oldest grandson was in diapers. He could swipe the tablet to his games and play his games that were age appropriate before he was able to speak. It was almost like it was just kind of, they've been born with devices. They've grown up with devices at such a very young age. Everything to them just comes naturally. It's so fun to watch. It's just not, you know, I still tell stories about when I remember getting cable, and we all have, you know, when you're older, you live in the past in that regard. We had three TV stations. There was no such thing as cable. And I remember when MTV only played a few hours a day and all that stuff. Well, the world has changed, and there is a lot to do with technology and privacy. We've had the conversation before on the air, and it's a valuable one, that legislation has always lagged fairly far behind technology. One of the people I've talked about on the show before is Christine Jones. Christine Jones was a candidate for governor and for Congress, but she was also the chief counsel for GoDaddy. And she's just a wealth of information on this topic, especially this topic, but so many. Being a lawyer and dealing at the time, you know, when GoDaddy was first and the internet was first becoming a huge trend around the world, how do you protect client data? How do you protect your client's privacy at the same time being a good corporate citizen and trying to stop people from using your services and platforms for crime? And there is a lot of constitutional conversation that goes in there. This is an interesting one when it comes to technology and privacy. Amazon must pay over $30 million over claims it invaded privacy with Ring and Alexa. So right away, that freaks people out, because, you know, one of the things you can do in many places, and I believe they have the program here, is you can sign up to allow the police department to tap into your Ring camera if they're looking for video of a suspect in a neighborhood or whatever. But also Alexa, with the voice and stuff that it reads, you know, you say things and it does exactly, it answers your questions instantly. How does all that happen? Are they listening all the time? We've all had this happen where we're talking with somebody about a specific topic, whatever it is, you're talking about something. And then the next time you pick up your phone, the ads on your phone are about that. It's creepy to a lot of people. But Amazon's going to pay more than $30 million in fines to settle an alleged privacy violations involving Alexa and the doorbell, the Ring doorbell, according to the federal filings. In one lawsuit, the Federal Trade Commission claims the tech company violated privacy laws by keeping recordings of children's conversations and its voice assistant Alexa, and in another that its employees had monitored customers' Ring camera recordings without their consent. So, you know, basically the rule is if they say you've got privacy, they've got to keep your privacy. You know, when you sign up for an app on your phone, I think all of us has figured this out by now. No one looks at the small print and the terms of use. You just click yes. But you also realize that many times you are opening whoever owns that app up to, or your app up, your phone up to anyone who owns that app, that they can get your data. They're going to get your messages. They can get all that stuff off your phone, and you've given them permission. Now, to me, it's ridiculous that they would do that, or that they would be able to do that. But technically, you've given them permission. In these cases, people are promised privacy. I love Alexa. I have it in my house. I love it. I listen to music. It answers questions. So it's a great resource. And many people control their entire house using it. There's no doubt the technology is of great value to many people. But what happens when you're trading a lot of your privacy for this? Meta is threatening. That's Facebook. Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, has threatened to remove news posts from those on social media platforms because there's a bill in California, Assembly Bill 886. It's called the Journalism Preservation Act. I'm sorry. The measure would require social media companies, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, to pay a monthly journalism usage fee to be determined through an arbitration process. The money would go into a fund for payments to companies that produce the content. So you can't just share things. This, again, California getting involved in stuff that's none of their business, but all in the interest of preserving journalism. Amazon, and what's funny about that is a lot of times, I know what we've done for years, what we've done with this kind of thing, is we want our news stories. When there's a great news story at KTAR.com, I'm going to send you there. You know, if we have something, if we got breaking news or exclusive stories, and we've got a great team of people that are writing all the time for that website, we want to get that all over the internet. Why would you not want people to share it? Anyway, so that's a different conversation. But on the privacy issue, maybe it's generational. I don't think that young people are as concerned because they've grown up just realizing that if you on your phone can see exactly where you are and map exactly where you want to go, and it's stored in your phone, that somebody else could have access to that history, and obviously anybody could know where you are. If you can remotely start your car like I can do it with the app, the Ford app, or if I'm close enough, I have an auto start on my key fob. Well, if I can automatically start or turn off my motor with an app, they can do it too. There's even conversation about repossessing your car using the app, disabling your vehicle so that you can't get into it or start it if you don't make your payments. I just think this whole world is, AI is another conversation, but this is stuff, this privacy is incredible. Coming up in a moment, we're going to preview our 10:30 interview, something I want to talk about with ESAs, which is the Empowerment Scholarship Account, people in school choice and school vouchers. Why is it so popular, and is it going to turn out to be a good thing? We'll discuss it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Do you remember when it was September? Love was changing the minds.
It's all right. You can dance. Even if you're at work. Thanks for being here this morning. So it's no secret that I've been a big proponent of the expansion of the ESA program. They used to be called and maybe they still are. It was known as the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts. It was for special needs students and parents, where tax dollars dedicated to those students for their education to be utilized by the parents in any way a parent saw fit to best educate their child. And based on whatever the need of the child was, the money fluctuated. And it now has looked more like education savings accounts because it's been expanded to all children. I think in principle, it is a great idea. I have a number of reasons why I believe that to be true from my personal experiences in life, but it just makes sense. We know that money limits the options for parents and what they can do with and for their children. If both parents have to work, sometimes transportation outside of the district school would be an issue. There's a lot of different variables of what the issue could be with giving your child a shot at an education. There's a story. This one is from Bram Resnick. The cost of Arizona's 8-month-old universal school voucher program is projected to hit $900 million over the next year, far beyond the money budgeted for the program just 3 weeks ago. The spending would be fueled by a surge in students who are from the current 59,000 to an estimated 97,000 by 2024. So I want to stop there for a moment. And I know that Bram and I disagree on this issue. I would say to you that when this was 11,000 students, and there was a lot more money available at the time, but only about 11,000 families were utilizing it in the past. But now you have 100,000 families, or close to 100,000 families, that want this program. It shows you how popular it is. Now, there's reasons for this. And this is where I think conversations can be had. From my perspective, I have a good rapport with Bram. We don't agree on a lot of things ideologically, I would say. But he's always been fair and I would say even kind to me. We've get along. We've joked with each other. We've poked a little fun at each other. But on serious issues, we may disagree on some things. But I would hope that we could have a conversation about this. It would make sense if we could have a conversation about this. And what I mean is, there's a reason why parents want their kids in other schools. Now, it's not all parents. Obviously, there's a lot more kids that are staying in district schools and are utilizing this program. But this is a big number. You can't say it's a huge number of dollars that's going to bankrupt the state and not acknowledge that that's because there are a lot of parents that want this program. And there's got to be a reason for it. The way I grew up, I was known as a Villas kid. It was a little neighborhood called the Villas when I first moved to Florida. I moved around because of my parents divorcing and stuff. But I've always been a Villas kid. My friends were in the Villas. It was that neighborhood I grew up in. We rode the same middle school bus, the same bus driver that drove my middle school route, drove the high school route at the same stops in the same neighborhood. We grew up together. I've been lifelong friends with some of those people since I was 11 or 12 years old. We have known each other and kept in touch, and we still, in our school, in our neighborhoods, in our community, we are known as Villas kids. We all went to the same middle school. We went on to the same high school. We have those kinds of continuity of memory and experiences. And why wouldn't any family want that? Your kids, where they go to school, live in the same neighborhood. You know the parents. It is, there's continuity in that. There's community in that. So there has to be a reason why parents are looking elsewhere, and you have to respect it. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to respect it. Parents were watching during the pandemic. They were watching how and what their children were learning, and they had big, obvious, and very serious questions. We were doing poorly in reading and math before, well below 50% in reading and performing math skills at grade level at third and eighth grade, and it got worse during COVID, and parents were watching what teachers were saying. I got story after story after story of what schools are doing, and there are a lot of parents that don't agree with it. And then to add insult to injury, when they went to school board meetings and they voiced their concerns, they were told to sit down and shut up. They were called domestic terrorists. The FBI was asked to follow them around. They were doxxed by the Scottsdale Unified School District. Well, the board president's father. I want to be fair. It wasn't the district. It was the guy's father, the former president. My point is, there is a very legitimate reason that parents are looking for choices. But aside from all of that, what I love about the possibilities of this program is that working class families who could never afford the tuition at a private school could use this money to private school. I don't care if it's a religious school or not. I don't care if it's a Jewish school or a Christian school or whatever it is. And I'm going to ask this question of the detractors. Do you believe that private schools are better schools? And if you don't, then you're saying parents are going to spend tax dollars to send their kids to a worse school? There's a reason why our governor went to Seton Catholic. There's a reason why her parents, and this is not an insult, this is a compliment. There is a reason why her parents wanted her in that school. And this may have been a time when the public school system in Arizona was ranked, I don't know how it was ranked back then. It might have been a good school district that she lived in. They wanted her at this school for a reason, and they sacrificed. I don't know their financial situation, but they made the financial sacrifice, and they had the ability to do it to some extent. Whether it was, it was hard to do or not, I don't know. But they made the financial sacrifice to send their daughter to Seton Catholic. Others send their kids to Brophy or Borgate or Scottsdale Christian or wherever these private schools are. And they think that's what's best for their children. And I would ask you, with all respect, everybody that's a detractor of this, why shouldn't working class with people without a lot of money or options because of their work schedule and the finances, why shouldn't their children have the same opportunity? How is it that the working class families in Arizona aren't saying this is a great idea? And I know what's going to come up in this conversation with the detractors, and it's going to be fraud. It's going to be people spending this money, and I'm going to use a defense to you that you're not going to like to hear, but you're going to have to recognize that it's a legitimate question. What about the waste and fraud in food assistance programs and other welfare programs and rent assistance and Section 8 and the rules that say you can't have roommates and you can't do this, and yet we know people do, and you can't buy this with your SNAP card, but people do, and people steal, and there's fraud. Do you think just because those programs have an amount of fraud in them that we should cancel those programs as well? You know that's not a fair assessment. Now, on the other hand, I will say to you that this is a brand new expansion of this program, and they're going to have to fight fraud, and they're going to have to make sure the limits are enforced and what you're allowed to spend money on is limited and it's policed, and people that are breaking the rules inadvertently get corrected, and the people that are breaking the rules on purpose are eliminated from the program. All that has to happen. But saying the program should end because people are going to cheat, well, then we can say that about every kind of government program there is. But transferring tax dollars, that's the other question, is where's the money coming from? From the general fund, or is it just being shifted from education dollars and it's just moving the money somewhere else? We're going to talk to Tom Horn. He's the superintendent of public instruction. We're going to talk with him at 10:35 and ask him all of those questions. So if you're concerned about this, I hope you can be here for it. In a moment, who will be the deciders of the 2024 election? Not politicians. What demographic of us? Who will make this decision? We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Man, you are on it with the music this morning. You are on it.
Let's go.
In honor, right? It's the start of Pride Month. Queen. There you go. Little Freddie Mercury for you. We're diverse on this show, I tell you. We're diverse. Thanks for being here. Who will decide the 2024 election? And I'm not talking about politicians. I'm talking about demographics. If it were me, and it will never happen because of these reasons, if I were running for an office, I genuinely wouldn't care if I won or I didn't win, if I accomplished certain things, which is why I'll never be elected or run for an office, because people are not going to donate you money to your campaign if you say, I don't care if I don't win. But I seriously would love to see the voter demographics change. I would love to see people that haven't voted in years but are registered to re-engage, and people that have never been registered to get out and engage. Because I think that that public who has strong opinions about who we are, where we are, and where we need to be would be the ones to get us there if they would en masse re-engage. You're right. One person is a drop in the ocean, but a bunch of people make a tidal wave. And so I'd like to see it. So here are a couple of headlines about demographic shift. Asian American support for Democrats drop over generations. Are Black and Hispanic Americans abandoning Biden? Top Mexican diplomat schedules an apparent anti-DeSantis event in Florida. As the Mexican president wages information campaign targeting Republican votes, the Biden administration is quiet. A couple of questions. I'm going to be a little sarcastic here, but I want you to contemplate this. How is there any difference between Russian interference in the 2016 election, where the Russians used social media and used their tactics to try to offset the election, in the mind of Hillary Clinton, that the Russians influenced the election so she lost it? And we have to stop people from doing this, and foreign influencers shouldn't be influencing American elections. But nobody's talking about the Mexican president going after Ron DeSantis and other Republicans. Isn't that the same kind of foreign interference? I'm just throwing that question out there. I think it's a valid question. But the real question here is, are we seeing a demographic shift? There are Republicans that do not like the Republican Party. They call it the uniparty. And I don't necessarily disagree with them sometimes, that there is not a lot of difference between the tax and spend policies of the Democratic Party that we used to be against as a party and what we're seeing from fellow Republicans that are elected to office. That's a valid complaint by some people. But the other is also true. There are people on the other side of the aisle that are abandoning what they're seeing for either social reasons or financial reasons. And are we starting to see more of the true melting pot that we want, where classically speaking, Democratic candidates can count on having the Latino vote or the Black vote? We know the older demographic tends to go more conservative. The younger demographic goes to the Democrats. Are we seeing a change in some of that? Is it something that is concerning to the political parties? I will say that the most important change in the voter demographic has been the number of people voicing their displeasure with both parties by registering as independent, or that you are not designating a party affiliation. I think that tells a huge story about 24 and moving forward. There are a lot of people that in their heart of hearts, if they talked about the policies and platforms of both political parties, would have to admit that they are Republican in nature. And just as many people, I would say, are Democrat in nature. They're disenfranchised with being told who to vote for and how to vote, and being cast out if they are not straight down the line doing what they are told to do. And that's exactly what's happening. I will tell you, because I am a Republican, the Republicans have a slate. They have slates. And they say, oh, if you like this candidate at the top of the ticket, vote for all of these people. And if you're not on board with a slate, if you deviate from that slate, you're not a team player, and they want you out, and it's time to go. And they sit in the bleachers with their tricor hats and call each other patriots and say, get out of my party. And there's a lot of people that say, I'm fine doing that. I can get my information anywhere. I don't have to come to party meetings to get information. I don't have to come to these meetings to learn about candidates. I've got social media. I've got all kinds of access in other places. I'm going to vote my conscience, and from my perspective, a lot of these people would say, I'm going to vote for probably the vast majority of issues and people you're going to vote for. But I'm going to deviate where I think that it's appropriate, and I'm not going to be called some kind of a name, whether it's a rhino or whatever else, because you don't agree with me. I don't need you. And that demographic, that independent-minded demographic, they will be the deciders, because they're a third of the voters in Arizona. You got Republicans on one side of the street, Democrats on the other side of the street, and they're trying to entice those people in the middle in their direction. Who's going to win that political tug of war? Which party is finally going to figure it out? I'm anxious to see. I truly am anxious to see how it plays out. Just after 10 o'clock, we are going to talk about the debt ceiling. The House passes the Financial Responsibility Act. How quickly will it get to the president's desk? We'll talk about it next.